Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
And once again, we bring you to the Writer's Block here in LA Talk Radio. I am Jim Christina, sitting in a studio with nobody. Okay, well, tonight we got a pretty darn good show for you. We have a writer and a photographer on that's like he's internationally famous. He's a world-class photographer, sold stuff to National Geographic. And the guy has got just, I mean, he's phenomenal. And he'll be giving you his website. So towards the end of the show, when you get his website, make sure that you go and look at some of these photographs because they are phenomenal. We have all of that. And we have stuff coming up right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
The Colorado Rocky Mountain High. I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. Incline Cathedral Mountain.
Welcome back to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I'm your host, Jim Christina, in tonight with Bob Brill is off tonight, and so is Bobby Jean Bell, our roaming reporter from Albuquerque. So it'll just be me and our guest, Mr. John E. Marriott, tonight. And before we get started with John, I just want to give everybody a heads up on what we got going. We got some ads to do, and then we'll get right in with John because the guy is like totally amazing. Okay, this is for Black Dog Publishing. You have typed your final period. You have stacked your last chapter. You sat back in your chair and you said to yourself, I'm done. Well, nope, not even close. Sure, you have finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Would you like to know what it takes? Well, it takes editing, and then it takes rewriting, and guess what? More editing, and more rewriting, and formatting, proofreading, and then probably more editing and more rewriting. So then, if you're lucky, you can get a cover designed and maybe get some printed and take a look and go through those proofs and get another proofreading done, and then you can get some books printed. And, you know, it's a lot of hassle for somebody who's just now written a book, and especially if it's their first one. So why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very, very small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing. And you help get some help putting some dollars in your pockets as well. We are here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea of what they're doing. So having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud. Give us a call at 805-795-3165, or you can email at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaolinelli, P-A-O-N-I-L-L-E-N-I-L-L-I, at tuscanybaybooks.com. So, or send us a manuscript, and we'll take a look at it and tell you if you have a little bit more work to do before it goes into editing. Okay, fall is quickly approaching. I believe it starts on Saturday this year, 22nd. And so F. Scott Fitzgerald states that life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall. And out west agrees. Time to rework your wardrobe and refresh your attitude. Add a leather or suede jacket, pull on a new pair of stylish boots, or slip on Johnny's sweater or a wrap. A dash of cinnamon, a splash of cobalt blue, a warm red, a swing of fringe, maybe even a spiced apple cider wine. Who knows? Out West Shop has just what you need to spice your life up with a touch of the West. So shop online at www.outwestshop.com for the best fine goods inspired by the West. And if you enter code WB9, that's WB9, you'll receive $10 off your order. Or you can call free at 877-340-9378. And, of course, as Bobby Jean says, it is always a good day out west. And Creative Edge. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet clients' goals. It's Creative Edge is your brand and your future, and that's Mickey Mickelson, publicist. So you may want to look them up. I don't have their website in front of me, but it's Creative Edge publicists, and you'll be able to find them right there on Google. Okay, tonight's guest, oh my God, the guy is so cool. He's just got so much neat stuff. As we said earlier, his name is John Marriott. He is one of Canada's premier professional wildlife and nature photographers. He has images published worldwide by National Geographic, BBC Wildlife, Canadian Geographic, Maclean's, and Reader's Digest. He has sold more than 45,000 books and is the host of the popular web series Exposed with John E. Marriott. John's new book, Tall Tales and Long Lenses, chronicles his rise in the wildlife photography ranks over the past two decades and recounts many of his favorite stories with unforgettable photos that go with them. Will you please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. John E. Marriott. John, I'm going to assume you're still with us.
I am still, Jim. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You know, this is why we ask you to write your own bio, because, you know, it just makes life easy for me. And then all your friends know, all your friends know if you lied on it, so there you have it.
I don't really have many friends, but...
I spent an hour and a half, 2 hours, I think, just going through the pictures just from The Tall Tales and Long Lenses. Holy crap, you've got some gorgeous shots in there.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, my. I mean, just the birds. I'm a big bird fan. I love birds. And there's so many good pictures of eagles and owls and all kinds of stuff in there. And then you get into the bears. Holy mackerel, you actually got a whole book of bears in there.
Pretty close. Yeah, it's got three or four chapters dedicated just to bears.
Yeah, and I'm not too certain, but it appears to me as though bears see you coming and start posing.
I think it's just the amount of time that I put in there. Eventually, good things happen.
Is that right? Because
I think I could tell you lots of really boring stories of not seeing anything or seeing bears not doing anything interesting. That doesn't make a good book.
I'm absolutely certain about that. I've had my horses. I used to have horses, and we used to go out and ride around the mountains here. And I think I ran into a bear one time, and my friend Steve Cazzetto and I chased it all over this valley, and we never did catch it. I mean, we'd see his butt going up over a hill, but that was pretty much it. So, yeah. God bless you for getting some of the shots that you've gotten. And there's one of a young grizzly that looks like he's standing up and posing, going, "Hey, over here."
That's a grizzly bear called Casper.
Yes, it's exactly who it was. So, yeah. Give us a little bit of idea how you actually got into photography, and then we'll talk about your writing prowess, because you did all the writing in this book as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I got into photography as a kid, actually. For my sixth birthday, I got a Kodak Instamatic. I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember those, but those little old film cameras.
With the square cube that takes with this flash.
Yeah, and then went out into the wilderness. I was fortunate. I grew up in a place in British Columbia, Canada, sort of near Vancouver, Canada, and went out into the wilderness and looked for animals and took all kinds of crappy shots with this little camera. And so got all these pictures of little old specks off in the distance, black and brown specks, and I actually kept a photo album of them. And then kind of through my teens sort of forgot all about the photography, and it wasn't until I moved to Banff in the Canadian Rocky Mountains in 1992 that I really got back into photography again. Mm-hmm. And actually had a job with Parks Canada in Banff National Park, and it basically had me right there on the doorstep with bears and wolves and elk and moose and so on. And I got very interested in photography again and quite quickly began to turned it into a career. And in the year 2000, 18 years ago, I turned professional and haven't looked back since.
Wow. Now, I have to ask, because I'm not, you know, I'm not a nature photographer, and, you know, I don't go out in the woods without some kind of protection with me. Do you ever worry that some of these grizzlies you're taking shots of are going to get really upset with you and come after you?
I mean, you always have, you know, the worst case scenario in the back of your mind. So I always go out prepared with a variety of things. Mm-hmm. Don't carry a sidearm or anything here in Canada, but carry bear spray with me, which has proven to be extremely effective. Always have a knife with me. Always have a safety device to be able to call out. Even when I'm out of cell range, I can hook into a satellite and send a message for help if I needed to. But generally, I just, you know, try to treat the animals with respect, and it ends up paying off in that you end up having a lot of encounters that are not aggressive. You know, bears, just like humans, have a real wide range of personality, and you pick the ones with the right personalities, they tend to be pretty photogenic, and that's what I've found over the years.
Well, they certainly are. And like I said, it looks like they pose for you. Because it's just amazing some of the shots you get. You know, I can remember sitting at the airport in Kodiak, Alaska, and watching the big brown bears cross the runway. You know, and the planes have to stop so the bears can go by, which is kind of unique. I think it's the only airport in the world that actually does that, or used to do. I don't know if they still do or not. I think they put up now what they call bear fences, but I don't think it holds them back. Nothing holds them back. But I that's the only time I've actually seen a bear, other than that one we chased all over that valley that one day. But to see them in the wild like that, and be, I mean, they're just a long lens, you know, and your heart thumping like gazillion miles an hour. It's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a bit of the time I'm in boats or things like that where there might be water between me and the bear. So the level of danger goes down considerably in those circumstances. Generally, you can never say it's safe, but it's a lot safer than it looks when you flip through the book and you look at some of the pictures and you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy got that close to these bears.
I know.
But generally, there's a, you know, a backstory behind it that, you know, really wasn't a dangerous situation.
Well, I, you know, here's a hot flash for you, John. They could swim.
Yeah.
They do swim. And I noticed you got some polar bears in there, but they aren't all totally white. There's some that had some brown and black in them. Is that natural for a polar bear?
Yeah, there's actually polar bears in there, and then some of the ones you may have thought were polar bears are actually a white black bear.
Oh, okay.
That is found only in British Columbia. It's actually just found in a little tiny area of the world, a place called the Great Bear Rainforest off the coast of British Columbia, Canada. Mm-hmm. And they're genetically white black bears, so they're similar to redheads in the human race. It's a double recessive gene.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very unique animal. There's only about anywhere from 100 to about 400. Nobody knows for sure how many, but I do a trip each year and go out and look for these special spirit bears, they're called.
Now, that's where you just came back from. Is that not correct?
That is right, yeah. I was just out on a boat for the last week looking for these spirit bears.
And you did find them.
We did, yeah. We had quite a bit of luck and saw three of them, including one of the ones that's featured in the book, a bear that I called Mum with the Raccoon Eyes. And she's a white black bear that's got kind of these blackish eyes. It almost looks like she's a raccoon bear, which is pretty interesting looking. So we saw her again, which was pretty cool. This is the 10th year that I've seen her.
Oh, the same bear?
Yeah, the same bear.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Is that unusual?
Not necessarily. Casper, the grizzly bear that we just talked about, I've seen 6 of the last 7 years. It just depends on the bear and depends on the area that I'm going to. But some bears do definitely come back year after year to the same salmon run or to the same meadow where they're eating grass or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not, like, as I said, I'm not familiar with bears, I'm going to ask a really stupid question. Do they get, if you see the same bear year and year and year and year, every year, do they ever get used to seeing you? And they kind of develop a a symbiotic relationship. Like, I know you're not going to hurt me. You're just going to shoot pictures. I'm just going to go over here and eat. You don't bother me. I'm not going to bother you. And hi, John, kind of thing.
Yeah, actually, it's a great question. I don't know if they, you know, I think certain bears would recognize certain people. I probably don't go to some of the bear areas enough. But there's certainly bear biologists in the past that have indicated that bears have gotten used to them or known their smell and known how they're going to behave. And certainly you see that with bears. Even if I meet a bear on a trail that I don't know, there's a lot of things you can check on, just like you can with a dog that you don't know. A lot of signs that you can see and figure out what type of bear it is or what type of moose it is, all that sort of thing. So, I think these bears do certainly have a familiarity. They certainly get habituated to human presence, and so that does lower the danger considerably. They know we're not a threat to them, and so in return, they're not a threat to us. And there's a grizzly bear sanctuary that I go to up right on the, just below the Alaska Panhandle in the northwest coast of British Columbia, called the Kutzmatin, and it's a place that's been set aside just for grizzly bears. And none of the bears in there show an aggressive nature towards humans. You can bring a boat up within 10, 15 feet away from them while they're eating grass or other food, and they have almost no reaction. You know, they might glance up to check you out, but other than that, no danger whatsoever.
Well, I find this job is fascinating. Now, you've sold to National Geographic, which is just a tremendous magazine, still, after all these years. And, God, I can remember my grandfather used to have, like, from 1929 all the way up. And you've sold to Canadian Geographic, and you've sold, I mean, your photographs are everywhere. You've even got stamps in Canada with your pictures.
I do. I've got stamps, and I've got a coin. So I've got Royal Canadian Mint produced a $10 silver coin using one of my images. I've had stamps of a burrowing owl from Canada Post. Had all sorts of accolades, but probably my most impressive one internationally was placing in the 2012. International Wildlife Photographer of the Year competition, second place in the portraits category. So it's kind of the Oscars of wildlife photography, and the portraits category is kind of like best actor. You know, it's one of the top toughest categories to place in. And I had a picture of a raven that looks like it's having a bad hair day, and it's actually in this book, along with the story of how I captured the photograph. So that was a real pinnacle of my career for sure to this date.
Now, taking pictures, I mean, my wife's a photographer, and I mean, she's not anywhere on your scale, but she's not bad. But it's like, I'd have never asked her this question. I probably should, because, you know, she's a pretty smart woman. But I'm going to ask you, because I'm kind of curious, is I know photographs, certain photographs taken in sequence tell a story. Do you, when you lay your books out, do you try to tell the story of what you were doing at the time with each photograph, or is it just placed for visual acumen?
I tend to place my photos more for visual acumen than I do to tell a story. And in part, that's because I do, a number of my books have written word with them, so you can actually read the story and then check the photographs accompanying them. But there are certainly instances online where I may post a photographic portfolio, a story to Facebook or things like that, where I let the images do the talking. But I try to, ideally, I want to be able to write a story that captivates people as well as the photographs. So I want people to come in and open up the book, love the photographs, and then start reading. And next thing you know, 2 hours have passed and they go, oh, geez, I just did three chapters there.
I know. That's what I was doing with your book when you sent us a copy of it. I was reading and I was looking at all the pictures, and all of a sudden I'm looking up and it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I go, holy crap, where'd the time go? You know, because it's fascinating the way you've told your story in and amongst the photographs. And there are some pages that have maybe 20 words on it. There's some pages that have several paragraphs. And if anybody really loves wildlife, you really have to invest in this book, I have to tell you. because it's really gorgeous. It is gorgeous, and the stories in it are just phenomenal. And you did all the writing yourself.
I did, yes. Mm-hmm. And it all started in 2002. I did a trip up to the Yukon in the north, which is just on the edge of the Canadian Arctic. Sure. And wrote all these emails back home at the time to all of my friends. And there were a couple of friends in particular that were really enraptured by my email stories. And when I got back, they told me, oh, my gosh, you've got to write a book about all these stories. Mm-hmm. And I joked, yeah, I'll call it Tall Tales, Long Lenses.
Right.
Because this particular trip, I had certainly told a few tall tales in my emails. So the name stuck, and that is the title of the book.
That is the title of the book.
But the tales are all true in it. Even though it is called Tall Tales, Long Lenses.
There you go.
The tales are all true stories and based on actual animal encounters or some of the odder things that have happened in my career. Mm-hmm. That make for an interesting story.
Well, some of those stories in there are actually... some of them are quite funny, and then some of them are like fascinating to read. So the title is perfect because it would sound so much better than big lies and crap pictures, you know. So
yeah. I think that would be a not so interesting book to put out.
You never know. I mean, people go for the obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, I went through your entire book. I looked at every single picture in it. I did not see one picture of a naked woman, and I am proud of you.
Yeah, that definitely was not something that I wanted to get into as a photographer. I was much more captivated by the bears and the wolves and so on.
Well, I mean, nature captivates, I think, everybody to a degree, and I don't think that's a far-fetched. And I think that, you know, nature is... You know, we're losing so much of it every single day, and to get what you get is phenomenal. And I just, you know, first of all, I applaud you. And secondly, do you consider yourself a naturalist, or do you consider yourself just a photographer that takes great pictures?
No, I definitely consider myself a naturalist and a conservationist. Mm-hmm. I spend quite a bit of time dealing with wildlife issues, both here in Canada and a bit with grizzly bears and wolves in the U.S., mm-hmm. And just trying to help educate people. And, you know, as a photographer, I'm very lucky in that I can reach a huge audience, particularly online, but also with my books. And So I try to always incorporate messages, if I can, into the written words that accompany the photographs. And sometimes the photographs themselves tell a conservation story.
Right, right. Well, your photos are so crystal clear. I mean, there are some that you can virtually see the gnats flying around the bear's eyes. I mean, it's just like, wow. But having lived in the Pacific Northwest, I mean, that's something you can't get away from, not even people. So, but
yeah, I mean, it's one of the many challenges with wildlife photography is
I'm sure.
You don't really get to choose anything. The animal usually decides when it's going to come out and what sort of light there's going to be and what the insect situation is like and so on.
Right, and then at nighttime, of course, you get the mosquitoes coming in and, you know, in armed airplanes. They're horrible.
Yeah.
You did a little time at Berkeley. You want to kind of cover that real quick?
Yeah, so I have a bit of a California connection. Back in 1990, I was about to quit university. I was studying forestry at the University of British Columbia and was quite disgruntled with how angled it was towards basically logging and harvesting forests in Canada. And I decided I was going to quit. And I had a professor that had gone to the States for his university degree, and he talked me out of it and ended up finding me a spot as an exchange student with the University of California, Berkeley. And he said, you know, I said, why would I want to go there? And he said, well, you know, all those textbooks that you love that I've shown you about resource conservation and wildlife biology and so on, he said, all of the professors that wrote those teach at this university. So that got me hooked. I applied. I won the exchange. Ended up being one of the first exchange students to ever go from the University of British Columbia down to the University of California campuses. And mm-hmm. I went and lived in Berkeley for a year and 8 months and went to school there and had a fantastic time and got to spend a bit of time up in the Northern Sierras and basically toured all over California and saw lots of black bears and rattlesnakes and all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah.
And, it really had a lasting impact on me. And I try to get back as much as I can, although the last few times has been more down in the L.A. area because I've got family living there.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing in California that we have a lot of is rattlesnakes. They're everywhere.
Especially this year. It was my first ever rattlesnake, so I was quite thrilled to see them. I know most people aren't, but I was pretty excited the first one I saw.
Well, you just, you know, as long as you don't bend over and try to look them in the eye, you're okay.
Yeah.
I know that there's not a lot of them up in Canada. In fact, on the western side of the Rockies and the Cascades and everything, there's not a lot of rattlesnakes. So, I mean,
we've got a couple areas where there's a few, but
eastern
definitely
part of
not
the state.
Something that.
And okay, I'm going to ask you now. We're going to switch gears. Just actually, you know what? Let's go do a commercial just right before we get into something else here. And I got to find it, and it's right here. So hang tough, don't go away. We'll be back to you in just a second. Okay. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and extra training if needed. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. When your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better. My guess is it was probably the dog's. So give him a holler, 805-524-1100, or go to alldogsrule.com on the World Wide Web. Okay, we're back. It's now 7:26. We are on the phone with John E. Marriott, and he's a world-class photographer, nature photographer, and it's his book, Tall Tales and Long Lenses. If you haven't heard of it, look it up. It is absolutely something to behold. It's just a wonderful, wonderful book. I'm going to if you want to call and talk to John, actually, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. We're going to change gears a little bit here, John, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
You being a conservationist, and I do appreciate you folks, and I you know, everybody should, either does or should worry about the environment, and unfortunately, nobody, you know, hardly anybody really does anymore. And then we have a president who just decides to go ahead and just build up the coal and, you know, take away all the regulations that have cleaned our air up. But I've often wondered if not the cities growing to the size that they are growing and all the concrete and steel being used, doesn't that add to the global warming? I mean, because the carbon footprint of cities is getting huger and huger, and I don't even know if that's a word, larger and larger and larger all the time. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, obviously we're all contributing to global warming in one sense or another. You know, I personally drive a vehicle, I fly places. There's no way around us having collective impacts on climate change, but I think I do think there are a lot of measures right now that are being introduced, or I hope are going to be introduced moving forward once the president moves on in the U.S. and once we get a little more serious here in Canada, that we'll start to get some of this in check. I mean, there's certainly a lot of doomsday articles you can read out there, and you know, I personally see some of the climate change effects traveling in the Arctic and northern Canada, and just seeing the freeze up for polar bears, for instance, you know, slowly get later and later each year.
Right.
And even if it's only by a day, you know, when you add up over 30 years, that's a whole month that polar bears are losing on the ice and getting thinner at the southern parts of their range. And so as a wildlife photographer, I see it quite vividly. And it's certainly something that I strive in my personal life to affect, and then also try through my my outreach, through my books, my online presence, and so on, to try to help educate people and get more people on board with realizing that we need to start taking action on this and do it. You know, the biggest thing is to do it as an individual. The biggest difference is going to be doing it as a nation or as a global community.
Sure.
That's where we're really going to make a difference, because there's always going to be individuals that don't want to toe the line or don't want any part of it or don't want to believe it. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, whether it's wildlife photography or anything else in the creative realm, I think most of us realize that we've got some work to do on climate change.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've noticed that even the last couple of years, I mean, it's doesn't get as cold in the wintertime anymore, and it gets warmer in the summer and stays warmer longer into the fall. I mean, right now it's supposed to be, next week is going to be October already, or a week after, I guess, and it's supposed to be in the 90s. And, you know, that's in Southern California. It's crazy. It's just nuts. But I've also noticed that some of the winters have gotten really severe as well. And I think almost because of the footprint of the big cities that it not only emit heat, but they also hold the cold longer, and the concrete freezes, and it doesn't get warm. It stays icy. And, you know, the lake effects, and, I mean, look at the blizzards they have in the East Coast and Midwest now that they never used to have. They have them, like, every year now, along with hurricanes.
Weather's certainly gotten much more severe, and we see that. My own personal experience with that is we were part of a flood here in my town in the Rocky Mountains, and it was a flood that hadn't happened in recent memory that anyone that's lived here could remember anything like it. And it caused about $100,000 damage to our house and to all sorts of houses in the community here.
Well, yeah. You've written five other books, or is it five total?
I've written five other books.
Okay.
So I've got, I started off in 1997 mm-hmm. writing a small pocket-sized guidebook called Central Rockies Mammals, which is about wildlife found in the Rocky Mountains, ranging from Colorado all the way up to northern tip of the Rockies on the edge of the Yukon. In 2007, self-published my first book, which was a coffee table book called Banff and Lake Louise, Images from Banff National Park. And that's been my bestseller over. I've sold about 18,000 copies of that internationally. So a lot of people that have been to Banff over the years end up picking it up as a keepsake. And then I've had a couple other coffee table books since then. And then just before this Tall Tales, Long Lenses book, I had a wolf book come out with a wolf researcher here in Canada, and it's done quite well. It's called The Pipestone Wolves, The Rise and Fall of a Wolf Family. So I've had varying degrees of success, but I think every one of my books has sold at least a couple thousand, so I'm quite thankful for that.
Yeah. We were talking before we went on the air about Tall Tales and Long Lenses, about you have three separate copies of that for sale. You have the basic copy, which is, what, $50?
Yep.
And that's, what, 206 pages, I think, is the total page count?
224 pages.
It's 224, okay.
Just about 9 by 12. It's just under 9 by 12. So it's quite a big, it's designed for a coffee table book. It is still, of course, readable, but it's designed to sit on a nice bookshelf mm-hmm. or, be displayed or sit on a coffee table or, in a doctor's office or that kind of thing. I think most people find it quite enjoyable. You know, for the $50, you do get a lot of book there, 224 pages, it's a big format, it's a nice hardcover, it's a beautiful glossy cover.
Oh, yeah.
You pop it open and it definitely exudes a high-end sort of a book. So there's that $50 regular edition, which is the one that's available on mm-hmm. Amazon and all the usual outlets, as well as my website.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have two different editions that are available. One's a limited edition, which comes in its own special case and is a different cover on the book. And it's a signed and numbered edition of 250,
mm-hmm.
and that's available just on my website. And then I've also got a special collector's edition,
uh-huh.
which is $995 Canadian, so about $750 US. And it includes my Canada Post stamp, my Royal Canadian Mint coin, a couple of prints of my wildlife images, and then another different cover of the book, all put together in this big, beautiful display case. That is a limited edition of 50.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only 50 of those. There's about 30 of those left. So
wow,
I've actually done pretty decently.
I actually had sticker shock when I saw that. I looked at that. I said $995 for a book. Holy crap!
Yeah,
that's why I asked you before we went on the air. You trying to retire with one book? Well, now you've sold 20 of them, so there you go.
Yeah, so they've actually done fairly well. I think it's just because it's a very unique item,
uh-huh.
Just like the limited editions are. You know, it's something that if anyone's a collector of books or is looking for something a little different than just a regular book, they certainly fit that bill.
Well, you know, we're not used to having photographers on board here, and so coming up with questions for you is easy because I love the outdoors and I love the wildlife. So, but I mean, it's fascinating to find out how you've taken some of these photographs and some of the ways that you've kind of tricked the animals into sitting up and waving Heidi, and you know, it's just amazing. And what are you working on now? Is there anything particular that you are working on?
Yeah, I've got a couple of different book projects on the go. One that I've finished all the photography for. Now I just have to do the writing, which is the hard part for me. and that's another wolf project. I followed a wolf pack for 5 years, now I just have to put down all of my stories. Right now they're all just in a voice recorder, so I have to put them onto a computer, put them onto paper, so to speak, and then go through and mold them into a mm-hmm. into an actual book. And mm-hmm. then I've got a new project that I'm just starting. It's going to be related to caribou conservation. So it's a species of caribou called the woodland or mountain caribou, which just barely dips into the United States. The United States used to have some of these caribou and now do not any longer. And Canada is very quickly losing their, they're quickly shifting more and more north mainly due to industry. So oil and gas, logging, road development, all that sort of stuff. So going to be looking at the story behind all of that and what we can possibly do, if anything, to halt that decline of caribou.
Mm-hmm. Now, I going backwards a little bit, you just mentioned you were working on a book about a pack of wolves that you followed for 5 years. I have heard, and I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have heard the same thing, is that wolves do eventually get to know a human if they're around them enough.
Yeah,
and I
absolutely noticed that with this pack, that they recognize my smell in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So even more than the sight of me often would throw them off. But if I was upwind of them, downwind of them, and they were catching my scent, I started noticing after a year and a half that they stopped reacting in the same way. Initially, they would just run away when they'd catch my scent. And,
mm-hmm.
and that changed over the course of the book, which was quite fascinating to see. And that's definitely one of the stories that I'll be talking about, is just this behavioral adaptation. They came to realize that I was not a threat compared to other humans.
Mm-hmm.
And so would let me get a lot closer than would be normal with a wild wolf pack.
Yeah, I wouldn't get near one. I'm just, I'm not that brave. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to drag me in there kicking and screaming and then drag me back out again, because I'd be hanging onto your shirt the whole time. You know, and I mean, screaming like a girl.
It's amazing
too.
Because people do, you know, view wolves as, you know, kind of the Hollywood wolf, the, you know, Liam Neeson movie where they're, you know, tearing and ripping at humans and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and that's couldn't really be further from the truth. you know, in the last 100 years, there's been 2 people killed by wolves in North America. And, you know, by comparison, you know, dozens of people killed by deer, you know, and yet we don't go around making up movies of deer attacking people and goring people to death.
So yeah, I've heard that. And their hooves are...
It's a big sort of myth in it. You know, Hollywood has certainly played a big role in that.
Oh,
but
yeah,
when I'm out there, I mean, you still have to be careful, but you don't, I don't worry too much about a wolf attacking me, for instance.
I mean, I know that their hooves are like razor sharp. And if they hook you there, you're in trouble. And they do.
Yeah, of course, those antlers are, you know, definitely a weapon to be wary of.
Yeah, I mean, I did see something on National Geographic Channel, and I have to watch that when my wife's not around, so, you know. But I watched a deer rear up and start, like, pawing this guy's chest. And just ripping him to shreds. And I thought, holy mackerel, that's Bambi.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, Bambi doesn't do that. But I guess Bambi does do that.
I often get asked by people what my most, you know, people have always, when they see my photographs and read the stories, they often expect me to tell stories of being charged by bears wolves or that kind of thing. My most dangerous encounter ever was actually a cow elk, a female elk, who was protecting a calf that I hadn't seen, and she came charging at me, and I had to wade out into a little pond and hold my big camera lens above my head. And
oh, man.
Had to wade in almost to my chest before she finally gave up the chase.
Moose will do the same thing, won't they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And that's a big animal.
A good way to get your heart thumping.
I reckon so. So, what do you go to bed at night? What's on your bedside table that you read?
I actually primarily read historical nonfiction now. At this point, a variety of things. You know, I read a lot of Edward Abbey when I was going through university, and John Muir and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, it's more historical nonfiction. It can be anything from South Africa to the U.S. to Canadian stuff.
Oh, we had a gal on Golly Live. I want to say April of this year. Her name was what was her name? Something Murray. Anyway, she's had written a book about South Africa. She's from South Africa. And it was just a fascinating read. And it was a work of fiction, but she says not all the way. Bianca Murray was her
name. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she said it's just, I mean, it was right in the middle of apartheid. Everything was just really crazy. And she said that it was a place that white people just thought they were Jesus, and that was it, you know. Who cares, you know. But, fascinating story. So anyway, you have got some stuff you're working on, and your other 5 books, the sales okay on those, I would assume, I'm going to guess, because you are quite the photographer.
The most of them have done quite well, thankfully.
You going to be doing any book signings or any personal appearances anywhere anytime soon?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things up here in Canada over the next few months leading up to Christmas. Canada has a sort of an Amazon-like a company called Chapters Indigo, and so I've got a number of their store locations that I'll be doing some speaking engagements at, and then I'm actually looking at putting something together in Seattle early in 2019, but we don't have a date picked yet. So,
anything further down south?
I'll certainly have that information on my website, though, if that comes to fruition.
Okay. Any plans in coming down further down south and like into Southern California, Arizona, Nevada?
I do want to come down to the LA area again to visit my uncle, and I would certainly love to do something in that area if I do.
Well, we would sure welcome you. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't think you're going to drive down the freeway and see banners. Welcome, John Marriott. But
yeah,
I mean, you know, drive down the freeway, I always see his reloading zones, but. Oh, I wanted to tell you too that I actually have a reservation at one of your hotels for the following weekend. So
yes, I wish they were my hotels. Every time I go stay at one and check in, they always look twice at the driver's license.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be up
in... Are you the same spelling, same everything? Yeah, no, unfortunately, the Marriott clan split long ago, and I'm a distant relation now.
Ah. Well, God, I mean, that's such an odd name. I mean, it's French, I guess. I don't know. But
no, it's English. English.
Oh, is it? Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, Marriott. Hey, you know, maybe, who knows? But I know I'll be up in Custer at the, I don't know, what is it, something in Marriott thing.
Yeah, the only difference is we up in Canada call it Marriott instead of Marriott.
Oh, is that right?
So,
huh.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you give our folks a place that they can contact you, email, and your website. Website is just dynamite. If you haven't been there, man, you got to go. It's a wonderful website. And Facebook and anything else that you have that you want to offer.
Yeah, so if they want to find me on Facebook or Instagram, the easiest way is just to do a search for John E. Marriott.
Okay.
John E. Marriott Photography. Same with Twitter. YouTube, I've got a web channel for my Exposed web series. So if you just look up Exposed with John E. Marriott, you'll see there's a huge load of subscribers on there. And we put out videos fairly regularly on there of all sorts of different topics, including some of my adventures into the wild. And then my main website is wildernessprints.com. So Prince, P-R-I-N-T-S. So wildernessprints.com. And I've got a blog and all sorts of things on there that people can check out. And, of course, they can order books.
Excellent. Excellent. And the book, of course, is Tall Tales and Long Lenses. And if you want to spend a grand, hey, you can buy yourself one of 50. Which has got all kinds of neat
stuff
right.
in
it.
Yeah, if you want to go for the special collector's edition, yeah.
I can pretty.
You've only got $50, and it's. And I should note too that on my website is all in Canadian pricing, so it's $50 Canadian.
Ah,
if you go to Amazon.com, it's $50 US. But if you want to save a bit on it, just order from me directly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I don't know, but
and your
that's
publicist
how they charge for it. So.
Your publicist is Mickey Mickelson.
That's right.
Creative Edge. Yeah. That is, he's mine too, actually.
And yeah.
I think just about everybody here in the studio has Mickey for a publicist. Well, I mean, you know, we love Mickey. He's so easy to work with.
Yeah.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for spending your time. And I know you're a busy guy, and it's always nice to have you give up, you know, 40 minutes of your time or 50 minutes of your time and come and visit with us. And it's just been a hoot talking to you. And I sincerely hope that our listeners get a hold of one of these books. Or, I mean, $50, it's really nothing. I mean, you know, for a book like this, oh, that's nothing. It made great Christmas presents, too, I'm going to assume. And,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And are you going to be selling them on your website as Christmas presents?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. Well, John, again, the book is Tall Tales and Long Lenses, John E. Marriott. And you can reach him at Twitter, Facebook, and every place in between. And we thank you so much for spending the evening with us. And have yourself a wonderful evening. And, again, it's been a hoot talking to you.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Oh, you're very welcome. And have a fun time and keep in touch with us, would you?
Absolutely.
Okay, good enough. Take care, John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And it was John E. Marriott. Truly, truly, if you haven't seen his website, you really have to go look at it because it is phenomenal. And he's got like almost all of his pictures from the book on there, which is absolutely wonderful. And if you haven't seen great wildlife photos, this is where you got to go. You have to go see John's book. And again, it's Tall Tales and Long Lenses, John E. Marriott. And it's available on Amazon and all online booksellers, along with his own website. Okay, let's see. What else we got going here? Next week, we have with us, Russ will be here with me. We have a mortician on the queue. His name is Stanley Swan. And he's got a book. He talks about being a mortician. I'm sure that's going to be interesting. And I like books like that. They're just so much fun. And let me see what else we got going. Bob has got a movie coming out. It's called, what is it? I don't remember. Bobby Jean, of course, will be back in 2 weeks. Bob will be back in 2 weeks. Russ will be with us next week. And if there's anybody out there that wants to kick in and be a sponsor on the Writer's Block, just let me know. You can email me at jimchristina@yahoo.com, and I'll sure be happy to send you a copy of the advertising and all that good stuff. And if you're also looking, if you're a new writer and you're looking of ways to self-promote, we call it shamelessly self-promoting, give me an email at the same email address, jimchristina@yahoo.com, and I would be happy to send you a copy of Tuscany Bay Books' Shameless Self-Promotion packet, and it's got a lot of really good information in there. And that was put together by Richard Polinelli, and it's just phenomenal. In fact, I just forwarded a couple copies to a couple other writers. So with that being said, I'm afraid that my time is up. I'm happy to have been with you, and I miss my buds, but they'll be back in a little few weeks. And Russ will be here again next week. And thank you so much for joining us right here on the Writer's Block. And for me, I'm out of here.